Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay and the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Tonight, we have our very special guest, Dr. Brian Hooper. So if any of you have any comments that you would like to make during this broadcast, you can call in at area code 646-716-4893. If you would rather email me with questions or comments, please do so at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. Before we get started, I just wanted to make a couple of announcements. We're starting to get things ready for our September healing retreat in Philadelphia. So if any of you are interested in getting the details on that, please write to me. Also, my new newsletter will be coming out in another 2 weeks. If you're not on my newsletter list, let me know. And I also wanted to mention to you that we will be having a couple of really good guests coming in to visit us in the month of April, including Patsy Ray Dawson, who many of you know as being a Christian counselor who works with women in these marriages and also has been very encouraging as far as getting women out of marriages who have, you know, problems as far as religiously understanding why they can do that. And also Donna Anderson from lovefraud.com has graciously agreed to come back to the program in April. And many of you really enjoy Donna's works on, you know, sociopaths. So please make sure you listen in to hear those programs also. Also, I wanted to mention to you that, you know, we're really looking for people to understand the importance of having our adult children of gay fathers support group. And, you know, it's really an amazing vehicle for young adults or adults to be involved with others who can understand exactly all of the issues and the complexities that they've been dealing with. And so if you do have children over the age of 18, you know, I strongly encourage you to have them get in touch with me so I can set them up for that group, because it's wonderful to see, you know, people sharing, you know, the kinds of issues that they've all been dealing with that they really couldn't tell us as their mothers. You know, they don't want to hurt us or get us in the middle of their feelings, so they've been keeping it in. And some really interesting dynamics have come about from this group, Adult Children of Gay Fathers. And so if you have children who are 18 or over, any age into adulthood, that need to resolve some of these issues, this is a great place to do it. So without further ado, I want to welcome Dr. Brian Hooper. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Hey, Bonnie. I'm great. It's good to be with you and the ladies once again.
Yes, thank you so much for coming here during, you know, the holiday, and I know it was a lot to ask of you, but I didn't care. I was asking it anyway, because you're so important to our show.
I tell you what, it's nice just to have the rest of the evening to spend it with you and your listeners. I'm quite fine with that.
Good. So, Brian, I think before we even get started, there's someone who's calling in. Look, can we talk to her a second and see who it is?
Sure, sure.
Let's check it out.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Bonnie and Dr. Hooper. Hello? Can you hear us? Well, it may be somebody who just wants to listen,
okay,
you know, as far as that's concerned, but that's fine.
That's
okay,
fine.
Okay, so
sure.
And anyway, getting back to how you're doing, we had a lot of issues that you were going to be discussing with us tonight, right?
Right, right, yeah. And I'll, do you want to start bringing those up? Would you like me to?
All 300 of them? Okay. No, we'll start with the one that we were talking about last, because there are so many issues to bring up with you. But the one that we were talking about last was nature versus nurture. And
right,
you had said that you would do some research for us on that.
Right.
And genetics.
Okay. Yeah, sure. So, the question often is, and this is one of the issues that spouses of folks who are find themselves, you know, married to gay folks often kind of want to work through, just to try to make sense of all of this. What in the world is going on? And so the question is posed, is it nature or is it nurture? What's behind what's going on with, you know, my husband and his orientation?
Mm-hmm.
My response to that is to say, well, it depends on which side of the womb we're talking about. You know, if we're talking about after the person is born, then I'm going to say it's nature. If we're talking about still in the womb, I'm going to say it's nature and nurture. And here's the reason I'm saying that, is that the research indicates that it's a combination, most likely a combination of genetics and what's happening chemically in the womb during during the 9 months of pregnancy. And so here's some interesting bits of information that begin to help make some sense of that. It's about halfway through pregnancy, halfway through the 9 months, that the brain develops in such a way that it begins to put together those parts of the brain that work on such things as spatial recognition and estimation and verbal skills. And we know that heterosexual men and heterosexual women score differently on tests that are done on such things as spatial recognition and verbal skills, okay? But there's an interesting correlation between the percentage of gay men that have scores that look like straight females versus straight men, which is an indication that the brain of gay men begins to be influenced in utero in the midst of pregnancy. So there may be a genetic component behind that. There also may be, however, the nurturing component of the environment itself. And here's some more information to add to that. But first of all, before I go any further, does that make sense so far, how I've explained it?
So far.
So far, okay. We also know that if you look at fraternal twins versus identical twins,
mm-hmm.
if you have one identical twin who's gay, there's a 52% chance that his twin will also be gay. They share all the same genetic material. If there are is a fraternal twin who's gay, there's a 22% chance that his fraternal twin, who doesn't have the same set of genetic material, will also be gay. So that indicates there that there's some genetic components to sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
Now also, if a woman gives birth to one male, and then gives birth to another and gives birth to another, the further away you get from the first birth, the higher the percentage that the male offspring will be gay. Are you still there?
I'm here.
Are there, Bonnie?
And I've heard it, but I don't necessarily believe it. But okay.
Well, but what I'm saying is that what we're seeing is that it is what happens in the womb, not outside of the womb. It's not nurture as you think, you and I usually think of it in terms of how they're raised. It's what's going on while they're in gestation, as well as the genetic material that's brought forth to create them in the first place. So when I talk about nurture, I'm not talking about outside the womb. I'm talking about the kind of environment that's happening inside the womb in addition to the genetic material itself.
Okay, and could you just explain that a little more again? What kind of nurturing is going on inside the womb?
So inside the womb, the hormonal levels that are taking place inside the womb may well contribute to the sexing, if you will, of the brain, what a person is going to be attracted to, the same sex or the opposite sex.
Now, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that women, after they've had their first male child, begin to develop antibodies that affect the development of the the male, if they begin to develop a male as the next child in their womb.
Uh-huh.
And indeed, so that's what I'm talking about. That's what I mean by nurture, Bonnie. I'm not talking about nurture outside of the womb. I'm talking about the environment inside of the womb.
Okay, and that's based on hormonal levels.
On hormonal levels, exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting.
Now, if you want to ask, do I believe that a domineering mother and a passive father create a gay boy, I'm going to say absolutely not. In fact, all the research indicates that's not the case. There are plenty of straight men who had domineering mothers and passive fathers, okay, as well as the other way around. So, you know, that's an old notion that's been completely discredited. Gay men are not simply men who don't feel that they've got enough of the macho something, and so they're trying to, absorb it, if you will, from other men. That's also been a psychoanalytic theory that's been floated and completely dismissed as having no reality.
And that's one that's really endorsed by groups like the, you know, ex-gay ministries.
The whole reparative therapy,
because you don't have a strong relationship with your father and you don't have strong bonding with him, you're looking for affection from males in other ways.
And I can tell you, in fact, I just came from spending Easter afternoon, early evening with my folks. My father's 88. My mom will have her 88th birthday tomorrow, okay? My father has told me since I was a little boy, and he started recounting to me stories of my infancy. My father recounts to me how he said, I loved holding you, giving you the bottle in the middle of the night. I never minded changing your diapers. And honestly, Bonnie, I can never remember a day in my life when my dad came home from work that you didn't pick me up and give me a kiss. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hustled, we wrestled, but he was also very affectionate, and he was there for me, and I knew my father loved me and was totally bonded to Dad, as well as
mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm an example of a gay man who has a great relationship with his dad, you know? The only regret I'll ever have when he dies is that he's no longer physically in this world. Nothing else will I regret. And not every gay man is in that situation. A lot of gay men have had rocky relationships with their fathers because their fathers recognized something in them that they were so uncomfortable with, they had to push them away because that's all they knew how to do. But it didn't make them gay. It was a recognition that they were gay.
That is so interesting. Glad you said that.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that before, so that's why I'm saying it's really interesting.
Well, it is. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, the percentage of gay men who have been abused as children, the abuse didn't make them gay, but it may have been that a predator saw them as vulnerable and abused them, took advantage
mm-hmm.
of them. You know? So everything, you know, here's just an idea I'd like to put out there for everybody who's listening. As soon as you hear anything that has a very facile, very easy explanation to it that seems to go one way, see if you can turn it around and run it back the other way and see if it might work that way. If it does, then you have reason to have doubt and ask more questions before you swallow the answer hook, line, and sinker. It's called critical thinking, right?
It is. And, you know, one thing that I couldn't quite understand is, let's say I've seen families where you can have 6 children and they're all raised by the same family, by the same parents.
Right.
And yet 2 will be gay and 4 won't be gay.
Right.
And was their upbringing so much different than the ones that before that weren't gay? I mean, I just never quite understand the logic and thinking that it happens to be, you know, the nurturing of the parents versus, and yet people will come up with these bizarre explanations. Well, by the time the 3rd child was born or the 4th child, you know, they didn't have as much time to spend with that child. Okay, so I guess that makes you gay, right? You know, it's like the most ridiculous explanations that people try to give you.
Exactly.
And how about, you know, they'll say, well, when she was little, her mother used to dress them up in girls' clothes. Well, and what? You know, does that change your sexuality because you're wearing, you know, girls' clothes?
Okay, so,
I mean, they'll try everything.
Let's just run this one for a second. The number of people who have been born with a not fully differentiated genitalia, okay? And the percentage, actually, I don't recall it off the top of my head, but it's actually fairly high. I mean, it's not like, you know, 1 in 100 or anything like that, but it's more frequent than what we might imagine. And there have, you know, it's been the practice until recent date. If it's kind of been amorphous, undifferentiated, well, we just assign them the, you know, female. But in many cases, the person's brain is sexed as a heterosexual male. And they've been done a complete disservice. So what I'm saying is dressing a person up doesn't change what's going on in their brains. And that seems to be the seat of their sexuality. We don't know if it is completely genetic or if it's completely hormonal. The best guess at this point in time is it's a combination of the two things, but certainly it's not nurture after they're born. That's very clear.
So there would be absolutely nothing that you can do that's going to affect someone's sexuality, and that would include abuse in childhood. Is that correct?
Well, okay, sexuality is a broader term. In terms of orientation, affectional and erotic orientation, I would say no. You can't do anything to make them be gay or make them be straight as you raise them. You can certainly, you know, shame people, you know, cause them to have a shame-based sexuality by how you raise them. This is one of the reasons that we see so much narcissism, I believe, among gay men, because there's so much. If anybody has done any reading in psych, they know, and I know you know this, I don't know if the listeners do, but if they've done any reading in psych, we know that behind narcissism is a very basic and deep shame. Well, when you raise somebody to be ashamed of who they are at the core, they tend to put on a show to give you what you are looking for, but they're still coming from a place of shame. And when you're coming from a place of shame, you tend to treat other people in narcissistic ways to manipulate them to get something from them to affirm you. And you're always afraid that they're not going to give it to you. And so, you know, you may act rather ruthlessly. And so we're not surprised when we see this among gay men who've been raised in a shaming environment where they have to repress who they are at their core.
Let me ask you
that's
this,
the
Brian.
Deep stuff, isn't it?
Really? I mean, people always bring up this argument, and I always say that when I see gay couples adopting children, that, you know, they're loving good parents and they should have every right to adopt children. Mm-hmm. So many people come back at me saying, well, they're going to raise a gay child. Well, I don't understand how you can do that. I mean, they say, well, if this is what they see and this is what they know, then this is what they're going to think, you know, is right. So can you address that for a moment?
Sure. I was raised by two straight people and a mother who, you know, I love her dearly. God bless her. We're you know, got a great relationship today. But when I grew up, you know, I mean, it was very clear to me that, you know, she would curl her lip, you know, around folks that she rather disdained. And, you know, she made it clear when, you know, what she thought of gay folks, without being real verbal about it, just subtle clues. Now, that said, you know, she, I think she was just sort of blind to a number of the gay folks that we were around. When I was a kid, she just didn't see it. But when she knew it, you know, she would She didn't like it. So I had it made clear to me, both my parents are straight. I'm gay. I didn't choose it. You know, nobody made me. There I am. So if two straight people can raise a gay kid, why can't two gay people raise a straight kid? They're going to raise them up from whatever's in their brains when they're born in the first place.
No, I agree with you 100%. But do you think that when you grow up seeing a certain way of life, can that affect your sexuality at all?
I think what it affects is what your values are that you bring to your sexuality. You know me well enough to know I'm a pretty conservative, pretty traditional guy. Well, guess what kind of sexual mores I was raised with? Pretty conservative, pretty traditional, you know? It's about commitment and love and communication. That's how you affect their sexuality. It's what they do with whatever their sexuality is.
So you're not going to influence that. I mean, I always tell women that you can't change a straight child into gay just because you have, you know, it's natural fears, and you have to understand that, Brian, that people are just so uneducated when it comes to this.
Of course it is. So I don't mind talking about it at all, and I never despise people or put them down if they just don't know about it. You know, we love people where they are. But what I'm saying is the most important thing they can remember is demonstrate and talk about your deepest values around your sexuality with your child. If they're gay or if they're straight, it doesn't matter. Pass on your values about how you love things. I love people and use things. You don't love things and use people. You know, that's how you can influence the children.
Mm-hmm. Also, I know this is kind of a hard topic to talk about also, but, you know, women, I think one of the big issues that women, you know, fear most is that if their husbands are around men and their kids are brought into it, and can these men be trusted? But, you know, for some women, it's a realistic fear. You know, a lot of times their husbands are going with guys who aren't much older than their kids.
That's
the reality. You know, some of them go with guys who, you know, once they get out there, they're with guys who are 30 years younger than them, and then their kids are there, and they're afraid the guy's going to hit on their kids. I mean, I think for some people, it might be a realistic fear.
I was going to say, I think it's not an issue of is the person your husband's dating or ex-husband's dating, a gay man or a straight woman. The issue is, are they a safe person?
Mm-hmm.
We could be talking about a father, a straight father, who's divorced and had a divorce with his straight wife, and she goes off and has a guy that she's dating, and he's around her child. That guy could be a pedophile.
And that's the reality, too. Absolutely.
That's
and I tell that to women.
So a couple ideas. Number one, I think it's important to teach children very, very, very early what we call safe touch. You know,
mm-hmm.
So children know their bodies, they know their body parts, they know what other people are allowed to touch and what they're not allowed to touch, you know. It's okay when your teacher touches you on the shoulder and they're talking to you about your lesson or something like that, whatever you're comfortable with, okay. It's not okay to be touched by anybody in other places, depending on, you know, boy, girl, whatever the child is. And making them comfortable and helping them know they can talk to their parent about that if they ever are touched inappropriately. And then I think it's important to keep the communication open with the former spouse and say, let's talk about how we're going to continue to raise the child, which means we have to put our personal feelings and hurt to one side for the sake of the parenting we need to do.
Mm-hmm. So another question that, you know, I don't mean to put you personally on the spot, but this came up a lot this past couple of weeks in our chat room. And I really don't have a good answer for this, but I can only base it on what my observations over the years have been. It seems that gay men, you know, have this great sex drive. You know, we're always, you know, women are always talking about this, that their husbands and sex.
Yep.
Now, Is there something to that, or is it more so than straight men, or?
Here's a couple ideas about that. You know, it's been said that when we don't, whatever stage of life we haven't gone through, we really need to go through that before we go on. And so we know that a lot of men, straight and gay, go through this sort of juvenile phase in at midlife, particularly if they haven't, you know, been working on their own inner developmental kind of work. So it's not surprising to me to see, you know, gay men who are, to use the phrase, sexing it up out there when they get their, you know, when they leave the marriage or even beforehand, before they come clean with their wife, because they may be making up for, in a sense, you know, what they hadn't experienced when they were kids. And it's sometimes juvenile and inappropriate. But frankly, no, I don't think that gay men are any more have any higher per capita sex drive than straight men.
It just seems that a lot of things that you visibly see, you know, within the gay community has a lot of sexual orientation to it.
Oh, yeah, I will say it's sex-obsessed, sure. Happy to say that I think that's true for a lot of gay men. Not for all, but, you know, for many. It's certainly what sells, you know, the advertising space in, you know, gay magazines and newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have to recognize that, you know, For all of the stuff that's flashy that is out in front of people, you know, there's the CPA and the physician and the lawyer and the contractor and the plumber that are gay that frankly aren't spending any more time thinking about or engaging in sex than the straight versions of the same thing. So
mm-hmm.
You know, the person by person kind of you know, evaluation that has to be done. But I would say with a lot of your listeners, the reason that they're listeners in your program is because they're with men who they've had problems with. These have not been men who have come to them and been very clear and very straight and said, okay, here's the situation. I want to comport myself appropriately. Let's work this out. You know, they caught them, right?
I guess. You know, it's just, like I say, so many different issues when you look at, you know, as far as the whole gay straight marriage thing, and it just is very visibly sexual to the women who are losing their husbands to it. And
sure.
I agree. I think it's been the early stages, you know, that's what it's about. Until you
mm-hmm.
find some... But I see so many established couples, and it's not what it's about. But I
right.
think when you're first getting out there, that this is, you know, what's the visible thing that women see. I just wanted to bring up another issue to you.
Can I tell you,
yeah, go right ahead.
Can I tell you a funny story before we go on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'll never forget the first time I went to my now friend's home, Dan and Carl, in Los Angeles. I had moved to California from Arizona. Dan is a Lutheran pastor, and he's been in a committed monogamous relationship with his partner, Carl, for, oh, golly, Gino, it's, 40 years, I suppose, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to visit them, this was in the days before a Lutheran pastor could be officially out. And but I had somebody had given me their name and some folks I could talk with because I was just, you know, really coming out to myself and figuring out what to do with this then. So I remember going to their home in the Silver Lake area in Los Angeles, this really lovely Spanish-style bungalow place, you know, and walking up to the front door and thinking to myself, two gay men live behind this door. I wonder what's inside. And I walked inside. It was a living room like any other living room. And there was the ironing that had just been ironed hanging in the doorway, just, you know, like the house I was raised in. And it looked, you know, amazingly conventional to me. It looked like suburbia.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we what your ladies are usually seeing is not that version, not that mature and settled version. They're seeing something very different. I just wanted to know that, that's all.
Yeah, and they are. And I think that's very normal when, you know, gay men are coming into their own and
yeah.
they're trying to relive what they lost over those, you know, 20, 30 years.
Right.
So I think they're starting from day one and everything that they've missed, because now they first have their opportunity to get out there and try to, you know, explore all the things that they think they've missed.
Yeah,
but we
right.
do see a lot of times with, you know, older men hooking up with younger guys, I think much more so than, you know, I see in the straight community.
Yep.
Do you see that?
It does happen a lot, and for various, many and various reasons.
Mm-hmm. And I know some of them, you know, as I tell women, sometimes younger guys like the security of being with an older guy, an older guy likes to relive his youth with a younger guy. You know, there's so many different variables about it, but I just
yep.
see it, I think, more frequently than I see it, you know, in the straight community. But what I wanted to ask you about is that we have women who go through that whole second honeymoon period with their husbands. You know, their husbands come out,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they leave the marriage because they've met somebody and fallen madly in love with him. And they go out there and they get their, for lack of a better expression, get their asses kicked. You know, it doesn't
mm-hmm.
work out, the relationship. And they come running home filled with words of remorse and sorrow. And, you know, it's so silly to leave this, you know, the marriage is their, you know, sense of comfort and safety. And they want to come home and they're going to be the best husbands in the world. And the women who are holding on to this last hope against hope that, you know, this could happen, I'm so happy to take them back, and it works really great. It's like the best time in their lives. I call it the second honeymoon,
mm-hmm.
and it lasts anywhere from like 4 weeks to maybe, you know, 6 months at most before
right.
things go back to where they were.
So why do you think that is?
On which end?
Why do you think that things then go back to the way they were?
Well, things eventually do go back because you can't change what is.
That's right.
You know, I think that people are just living on, I think the men run back because they've been rejected and they
mm-hmm.
go back to what's good and familiar and they know that their wife still loves them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they go back, you know, with bad intentions. I think they think, oh, well, maybe that was something that worked for me. Let me see if I can really make it work.
Right. Uh-huh.
You know, it worked for them, but it doesn't mean they were necessarily happy with it. But at least it
yep.
was familiar, and at least there's loving arms waiting at the door for them rather than the rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And for the women, I think in their minds, on some level, they're hoping against hope because so many women, once again, don't understand this is just not about sex. Like when they say to me, you mean he's willing to give up his whole family just for sex? No, it's not just about sex. You know, it's about who he is as a person, but, you know, I have to really work on some women with that issue. But I think for the women, they're saying, see, he went out there, he learned his lesson, this is not what he is, he knows that he's going to get the love here that he needs, or he dabbled or fooled around and realizes that his family is more important. So, you know, they're all so happy, and these guys are feeling this big sense of relief that their wife is taking them back, so, you know, they're on their very best behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And hoping that it will work, but they realize after a few weeks that this is not what they want. But I wanted you to, you know, maybe talk a little bit about, you know, men who go through this, that women should not be taken in by this because it's not something that's going to be lasting.
Right. So I think that there, well, let me get to the second case later. I'll talk about this first. So I think that exactly what you described happens, and the reason that they can't sustain it is because it's not simply about the sex. It's about the longing for their, quote, half that feels congruent with who they really are, and being with a woman really doesn't satisfy that. It's an
mm-hmm.
emotion, a deep emotional kind of relating that they're longing to have with another man, and that is not going to go away. So it's not just about you know, genital sex. It's about the kind of longing to be with somebody. And so let me put it in words that may make more sense to a straight woman. So we say to a straight woman who is raised, say, in a fairly well-to-do home. Let's make that the scenario. Well, gee, you know, you've been raised in this well-to-do home. You have everything you want. Your parents love you, you know. Why do you need to go get married? Don't you want to just stay at home? Well, the straight woman says, no, I long for a companion. Well, you know, your father and I are companions to you. We enjoy your company. Don't you enjoy our company? Well, yeah, it's not that I don't enjoy your company, but I long for this other to be with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's perfectly good sense. And the gay man has just, you know, gotten himself into a relationship with a really wonderful person, but she's really not what he needs. He needs to be with another man. Or the heart stuff.
I think women find this hard to understand, especially the ones who have been in long-term good marriages.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some of our women who have really been in good marriages.
Right,
and
right.
If it's a heart thing, they can't understand, well, you love me.
Right.
We're the best friends. We do everything together. We're good companions.
Right.
So
right.
It's hard for me to explain to them the heart thing. Can you talk about that a little more, maybe clarify what I can't?
Oh, you want me to clarify what philosophers and theologians have been wrestling with for millennia, huh? Just do that in 5 minutes, Brian.
No, but
you know,
I think it has to be, but I mean, like, why is it just
the heart
thing?
The heart has its reason that reason does not understand. Oh.
But it can't just be the heart thing. It has to also be the sexual thing, right?
Well, of course. I mean, it's a package deal. You know, we
right.
can't separate the two. But what my point is, it's just not about scintillating sex, okay? That's
mm-hmm.
not. That's certainly not the whole thing. There's something else going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably actually, you know, going back to the brain research, is probably something that's going on with the way that the brain is pattern informed. For instance, when you have males who self-identify as gay early on and they begin to develop in their early youth, they're going to notice the pheromones that females are exuding, but they're going to be turned on by the pheromones that males are exuding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's what their brain recognizes. And this has been done through, I mean, there are studies out there that you can easily find. I'm trying to remember the name of the researcher at the university. It's a woman researcher who I just was listening to a brief talk that she gave, and she talked about this very case. That the brain just recognizes the pheromones of a gay man, recognizes the pheromones of other men, and is drawn more towards those than towards the female pheromones. I mean, that's certainly not a choice, but that's not just about sex, but it's tied into sex, isn't it?
I think it is.
Of course it is. So, I mean, so, you know, how can we tease out exactly what we mean by the longing for the other? I don't think I can, you know, quite quantify all of that. All I'm saying is it's something that we can recognize that's either going to work or isn't going to work. Incidentally, I do think that there are some gay men who, and this is probably going to see less and less of this as being gay becomes more acceptable, but I've met a few who I have no reason to believe, nor did this ever, you know, come to my attention that they were cheating on their spouses. I certainly read them as gay. But I think that they may have chosen to simply tamp down, if you will, that you know, their attraction towards men to keep that in check. These are devout and, you know, religious men who chose to do that. I think that the minority of gay men who get married, I do think there are some gay men who don't act outside the marriage. And, you know, they value their wives, they love them, but may not be as full as what they would like. The wife may or may not know the difference. But they hold it together. And that's the choice that they're making. But I would be suspicious of those who have gone out there and been sexually active in the community and then come home and say, oh, that was just a fling. I figured it out. I want to stay. That, I don't think that works very well.
I don't either. And as far as, you know, men who suppress their sexuality, I think maybe, again, you can reaffirm the fact that there are some gay men who can have sex with women, right?
Of course. Of course. That's how it is that so many gay men are fathers. They've had sex with women. They got married thinking they were doing the right thing. And they cared for, and they do at some level love these women.
Mm-hmm. I mean, not all gay men can perform with women, correct?
Correct.
Right, but some can. And I think that's what fools us.
Right. And the other thing, then, is that they then tell themselves that they're not gay, that they're bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you something kind of interesting. You know, you and I agree that there isn't really a scale. Either person is or isn't, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there, but a gay man may have some straight experiences of sex.
Mm-hmm.
So on the intake form I have for new clients that come to see me,
mm-hmm.
I have a scale. All it is a series of asterisks on a line. One end says gay, the other end says straight. And
mm-hmm.
I ask them to circle where they think they fall on that scale. The reason I do that is not because I really believe that there's a scale, but it gives us opportunity then to talk about how they're conceiving of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important because I'm trying, especially when I'm doing premarital counseling, if I can help weed out, it's not a very nice term, weed out, is it? But
that's good.
You know, if I can help people get clarity early on so they don't have to go through a heartbreak later, I'm perfectly happy to do that.
Now, do you think at that point where they're getting married that they're willing to listen to that?
Well, at least I can plant the seeds, and if the woman, you know, has seen things that are questionable for her, at least it says to her, this therapist is open to talk about it, it's safe, we can bring it up. You know, I'm not saying it makes it a topic of conversation for everybody, but at least it opens the door for them to recognize that it can be talked about and there's a safe place to talk about it.
Let me ask your opinion of this. People always say, well, today life is so much different than it used to be 25, 30 years ago for gay people. And in some places that's true. I tell people not every place, but in some places. Why will there always seem to be men who are gay getting married in a world where, you know, gay is more acceptable? This is their question to me.
Well,
so let's see if we have the same answer.
Yeah, overall things are more acceptable, but we're not there yet. You know, there's still places where people are going to get, you know, run out of town because one is black and the other's white, and they're both straight, but they want to get married. People, you know, and we've had the civil rights movement since, what, 1958? We've been working on this. So, you know, it takes time to turn this big ship of state on these issues. I can certainly tell you that it's not a deal that's done in Tennessee, not when you have legislators who are trying to make school counselors tell the parents of children who say to them that they're gay, make the counselors call the parents and tell them the kid's gay. And the counselor may be the only safe person to tell that to, because Papa would beat the living you-know-what out of the kid if he knew that the kid was gay. So
now, what's the logic in that argument, if you don't mind me asking?
You telling me? I have no idea, Bonnie. Well, it's all based on fear. It's coming from a legislator here who just completely despises, you know, gay and lesbian people, and believes it's some sort of choice, and, you know, wants to be very punitive and not helpful. So there is logic to it, other than, you know, a corrosive mindset. As long as there's any prejudice in society, there will be straight men, or there will be gay men who are engaging in straight marriages.
And I still feel that no matter how acceptable gay is, you know, considering where it was, or will be in 25 years from now, it's still harder to be different than it is to be the same.
Sure.
In any situation. If you have the opportunity, if you don't really understand homosexuality and you have the opportunity to fall in love with somebody because you can perform sexually with her, you know, I think that has to be so confusing to men, because I would understand, like, if you're gay and you look at a woman, and I have gay friends who could never, ever, no matter if they had a most beautiful naked woman standing in front of them, they're not going to get excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there are other men who can get excited by women, and, you know, at least when they're younger anyway, you know, in their late teens, in their 20s, maybe even their 30s, I mean, they can feel excited by a woman. So I think that in their heads they're going to hope against hope that if they can feel that excitement, that they're really not gay. And, you know, if they have a choice, they don't want to choose gay. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think you're dead on right.
And I don't think that's going to change in time, no matter how accepted homosexuality will ever be. Because even if it's more accepted, I can't see it being equal in people's minds. I think because of religion in this country and because of, you know, some of the conservative points of view, which really stem from, I think, Christianity. But I shouldn't just say Christianity, because, you know, this is the same kind of theory with all kinds of, you know, religions. You know, the Muslim people, you know, it's even worse for religious Jews are totally unaccepting of it. But, you know, since we are the majority of Christians, and, you know, majority of people in this country are Christians, that's why I mentioned Christians. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the church is ever going to be more accepting of it than it is, you know. I mean, it's come a long way in some churches, but not in a lot. I mean, you're in the ministry. What do you see it as?
Oh, I think you're exactly right. I mean, I'm fortunate because I'm in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, which is fully accepting of gay and lesbian people in the clergy as well as in the laity. But, you know, together with the Episcopalians, there's in the United Church of Christ, there's not a whole lot of other I call them standard brand denominations, that are fully inclusive of gay and lesbian people. Certainly, you know, as wonderful as the new Bishop of Rome seems to be, I don't think they're going to be fully accepting of gay and lesbian people anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a huge, huge percentage of Christians in the United States are Roman Catholic. So, you know, I think that we have a long ways yet to go in that area.
And I don't know if it's ever going to go anywhere, because of the fact that if people believe in the Bible, you know, they're going to argue you to the ground that this is the way the Bible says it.
Yeah,
and
right.
This is what they do with me all the time. They keep arguing with me that, you know, the Bible says that, you know, this is against Christian law and, you know, it's punishable by, you know, killing the person or whatever the case is.
Bonnie, I meant to tell you that since I was on your show last month, I've completed a little monograph that deals with the whole issue of Christianity and homosexuality and how the Bible is used and misused. And that's available for free to anybody who wants a copy of it. They can have a copy. Happy to give it away.
Great. How do they get that, Brian?
Yeah. They can write to me at Brian at D as in David, R's and Roger for doctor, Brian at drbrianhooper.com, and just request it, and I'll send it out to them.
Okay, that would be great. And if you didn't get Brian's address, you can write to me at bondk@aol, or just go to my website at gayhusbands.com, and to the right where I have my links, you'll see Brian listed there for therapists. And you can just click into there and, write to him through there. But could you mention a couple things about that?
But I also want to give a plug for one other piece. I was in a brand new publication here in Nashville called Unite Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an article in there. The whole article that I wrote is dealing with when you've said yes, when you've said I do, and now you need to say I don't. And
uh-huh.
It's addressing gay men who are in straight relationships and what it is they need to do to have integrity and do the right thing. So feel free to look at that, unitemag.com. And
I'm going to be publishing that piece, if you don't mind, in our June newsletter Father's Day edition.
That's perfect. You don't even have to go looking for it. It's coming to them. So
I wanted to feature that in our...
I'm going to give you a plug. If you haven't subscribed to Bonnie's newsletter, hey, absolutely get it. It is awesome. What this lady does is awesome. Get on her newsletter list, and she won't otherwise bug you, I promise you. Right, Bonnie?
Well, I don't think I have to beg too hard. Usually the people listening to this show are on that list.
Okay.
But, it really serves as a great sense of support. And, women are so appreciative each month. I get beautiful feedback from them. So that's what keeps me plugging along. In fact, this is going into, this is like my anniversary month. This is going to be my 12th year now of the newsletters. And you wouldn't think that after all this time, every month there's something to say, but there's always something new to say.
Yeah, because there's always new situations, and it's new to the people who are finding out about it. So good for you. Thank you.
Exactly. But in my June issue, I always feature stories from, my gay men who are part of this network,
mm-hmm.
and their stories and their experiences, and I do it for twofold. First, I like something, when I have a lot of gay men who come to me who need help in coming out. And so, of course, I try to get them as much information as possible because I'm a very big believer in them coming out to their wives. So I like to keep every June doing a newsletter. I've been doing that for 4 years now, geared for men. But I also do it for the women because they have to understand what's going on. You can't just keep your head in the sand and think that it's going to get better.
Right.
Homosexuality is not a disease that can improve. And I think a lot of women are thinking, well, my husband's going through something, it's a midlife crisis, it's an illness, he's going to wake up, or this is a nightmare for me. And believe me, it is a nightmare for them. I can't tell you how many women tell me they are hoping when they go to sleep and they wake up the next day that this is all going to be a bad dream.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as they have to accept that it's not a bad dream, then they have to accept that the reality of what it really is. And
right.
they have to accept that their life as they know it is never going to be there again. And, a lot of them have to readjust everything in their lives, losing their house, losing their family. There's so many different complications that come about from these marriages. So I think they need to see this and hear it from the men. And I think it's comforting to some women in an odd kind of way, but to see that these men did love their wives, when they married them. There
mm-hmm.
wasn't any ill intent there, and these guys really thought that they could make this work. And
right.
these are the men who write for that newsletter, but I really wanted to put yours in there because it does go to every man that, writes to me, and I thought this would be a good way for them to see what you're writing.
Wonderful. Thank you. That's great.
But one of the things you have in here that I just want to mention to women, because Brian says, it's called What You've Said, When You've Said I Do and Now You Need to Say I Don't. And, he's writing it, for gay people because this was a gay magazine. And he says, so what if this is your situation? He gives a list of what people should be doing. But I like where it says, tell her the truth. No matter how you package this, it will be the hardest day of your life. And it will feel like death because it is. Self-deception and deception of others must die if you are to be raised into the fullness of who you know you are at the core. She deserves the truth, and so do you. And I think that really is so important.
Thank you for making that quote. Yeah, it is so important.
And it is the hardest day that a man will ever have to face. I always tell men it will be the worst day of your life. But once you speak the words, you know, they're already spoken. You can't take them back, although some men try to.
Yeah.
Some men panic later and they say, no, I was just telling you that because I was just playing a trick on you. You know, they just.
Right.
Now, it is the hardest day of your life, but living the life that you lead every day, living a lie has to be harder.
Yeah.
I can't imagine every day living a lie, pretending to be somebody that you're not, and walking in somebody else's skin. You know, it doesn't make it any better.
Nope.
But I know it is hard for men, you know, to do that.
Exactly. Exactly.
But you do hear a lot of stories of men who can move on to better lives and women who, you know, also move on. It's like tonight one of our women in the chat room said, well, since my husband's left, I'm on my own, but I don't mind being alone. And I said, you know, sometimes, you know, you can be with somebody and be more lonely than you're alone.
You know, John, Father John Powell, who, may he rest in peace, a Roman Catholic priest who was known for his work in communications and counseling, really, really great guy. He used to say, he had a line in one of his books I read early on, said, the loneliest people tonight are those who are in bed alone, but those who are in bed with someone who has become a stranger.
I think that's really great.
Yeah, I completely concur with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So I think that you can, you know, you just have to realize, I always tell my women, I wish I had those ruby slippers that Dorothy had in The Wizard of Oz. You could just click them. You could click them and be a year past where you are today. Because I think you know, you find yourself in such a better place, even though at the moment, you feel like you can't survive, you can't breathe, you're choking, you know, your life is in such chaos. But if you can look a year down the road of how your life would be changing, I think it would take a lot of pressure off of women, but I guess that's not a reality.
No,
unless you're familiar with those golden ruby slippers, if you have them in Tennessee, they're somewhere.
I can tell you I don't have them. I'm one of those gay men who would not fight you for them. You could have them if you want them.
Well, that's a break to know. Thanks, Brian.
Never got into that, Bonnie, but hey, you know, to each his own. But, you know, one of the things that you mentioned seeing in the future, I will tell you a technique that's used in counseling, which is helpful, is called future pacing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's take some time and begin to imagine the life the way you want it and imagine yourself now 6 months into the future and begin to experience that now in that kind of quiet meditative way. Experience it now as if you're already there. And that really does help people begin to move towards what it is that they begin to see out there in front of them and get them, their vision lifted up beyond just the present moment. We believe, we behave, and then we become. We believe, behave, and become.
Mm-hmm.
Create your dreams, ladies. You know, create a vision of where you want to go and begin to live out that vision, live into that vision.
Well, I think that's why it's really important we tell women to put up, you know, visualization boards.
Yep.
And just cut out pictures of magazines of places you want to go, things you want to do. You know, just keep them in front of you so you can keep focused on moving ahead instead of being stuck behind all the time. You know, because a lot of times you can't really see that there will be a future. So if you have it in front of you, sometimes it's easier to, you know, use that kind of visualization.
That's great. Great advice. Bonnie, I can't believe we've spent another hour together already.
I know, Brian. I know, I bet there was a lot of stuff we never got to cover. But that's the great thing about you coming back.
Yeah, I keep coming back as long as you'll have me, hon.
We'll have you forever, Brian. I do want to have, like I say, thank the women in my chat room. They were so excited. They left the chat to listen to you. Big love to my girlfriend Grace in Texas. She just loves listening to you, Brian. She can't wait till you're on every month. Yeah,
thank
Grace
you.
Is really awesome. She's one of my best buddies there for giving support. And, you know, like I say, we have such a wonderful network of women who really are out there reaching out to others and helping. And, you know, certainly this is a monumental kind of job that I could never do by myself. You know, thanks to people like you and our support group that more and more women can get help and more men, of course, also. So I love you, Brian, and I appreciate your coming on here every month, and we look forward to the last Sunday of the month to have you back.
As do I. I love you as well, and thanks again for a great evening.
Yeah, same here, and also it's drbrianhooper.com, drbrianhooper.com, if you want to just sit there and look at some gorgeous man, or if you really want to read about him. Either way, it works for me. I love going to your site, Brian. But seriously, well, that is serious. But also, if you'd like to read what Brian does, if you have, you know, need for therapy, Brian does therapy via in person, in Skype, by phone. If you have a husband who you feel would really benefit from therapy, this is a man to send him to, and, you know, regardless of anybody's sexuality, Brian's the most comforting man, as you can hear, as we have him as our guest each month. So if you need more information, please write to me at bondk@aol.com or just go to Brian's website directly and you can reach him that way. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you, dear.
All right, and I'll talk to you next month. And love to all of you out there. Good night.
Bye-bye.